Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
One provision of the Senate Energy Bill has the potential to damage more living creatures than any other single effort in the history of humankind. It's all part of the ongoing quest for oil and gas, and it's passed in the Senate. It sounds so nice, the Ocean Resources Inventory, but this effort may be the most flagrant violation of our dominance over the creatures on this earth ever. And it just slipped its way into America's new national energy bill. Is it science or something worse? We find out when we return on Your Voice of the Earth, here on the Wildside News. The Senate's National Energy Bill, now under consideration, being managed in the Senate by two New Mexico senators, Domenici and Bingaman. Let's be honest. Domenici has served the major energy companies most all of his life, and his seniority gives him an inordinate amount of power in the Senate. The big winners in the Senate bill are specifically nuclear power, which has been reborn under his guidance, coal, and the oil industry. There has finally been acknowledgement of alternative energy as a player, albeit ever so minor, but at least discussed. But a rather unique provision of the bill, which seemed to come out of nowhere, was the request for yet another energy resource survey.
Join us now from Washington, D.C. to discuss the survey is Lisa Speer, an oceans expert from the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC. Lisa, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Lisa, let's start out by letting people know what the NRDC is.
The Natural Resources Defense Council is an environmental organization dedicated to protecting the environment and public health. We have almost 1 million members and supporters, and we use our various staff and membership resources to promote environmentally sound solutions to the nation's environmental problems.
I've been following the energy legislation that's being discussed in the Senate right now. Hopefully this country can eventually get around to some sort of energy policy, preferably one that actually leads to resolutions of our energy crisis in an environmentally sound and sustainable way. I'm not so sure that that's where we're headed exactly, but at least we're making some progress. But one of the aspects that came out that kind of took me by surprise was something called the OCS. And you actually have a familiarity with the OCS. Why don't you give us a background on that?
The OCS stands for the Outer Continental Shelf. This is the region of the U.S. that extends from 3 miles offshore out to 200 miles offshore. This area, which is larger actually than the onshore area of the United States, is managed by the United States for its resources. One of the big debates with respect to how we use the Outer Continental Shelf has been related to the development of oil and gas in those areas. The Outer Continental Shelf around the country does contain oil and gas resources. These are federal lands, and so that oil and gas is federal oil and gas. And the question is, how much of this do we want to develop? Where do we want it developed? What are the environmental impacts of developing that oil and gas? And how are we to make a decision as a nation about the appropriate use of offshore lands?
There are certainly positives in the sense that we are able to draw upon those energy resources to help resolve our energy crisis. But as well, there's other environmental considerations. And for that reason, there actually has been a moratorium in place for quite some time in most of the continental shelf areas of the United States.
That's correct. There has been a substantial debate about how to proceed over oil and gas development offshore. And many states have said that they do not want to see the federal land that is lies 3 miles off their coast, developed for oil and gas because those states have a very strong and significant interest in protecting their coastal and ocean resources from the effects of oil and gas development. As a result, states banded together in the 1980s to object to a plan by then Secretary of the Interior James Watt to open the entire Outer Continental Shelf throughout the entire country to oil and gas development. States like California, Massachusetts, Florida, and others got together and essentially objected to that, and through their congressional representatives obtained a moratorium that has been in place now for more than 20 years, and that moratorium prohibits the Interior Department, which is the arm of the U.S. government responsible for managing the Outer Continental Shelf, from offering for lease or conducting activities related to oil and gas off the coasts of the moratorium states. The Senate bill contains a provision that requires the Interior Department to inventory the Outer Continental Shelf, and there was an amendment to strike that provision offered by Senators Nelson and Martinez from Florida and supported by senators from coastal states around the country. Unfortunately, that amendment failed, and the provision in the Senate bill remains. On the House side, there is no similar provision, and so when the House and Senate meet together in what they call conference, they will have to work out differences between the two bills, and this inventory is one of those differences. The outcome of the conference will determine whether, in fact, this inventory of Outer Continental Shelf resources proceeds.
Let's talk about what this provision actually is going to involve. It's called an inventory, and as you, I read somewhere, you said, well, this isn't really something that happens on paper. As a matter of fact, that is the issue. This resource inventory is quite a very complex and very controversial action. What actually is involved?
Well, there are two parts to the controversy. The first has to do with the impacts of the inventory itself, and the second has to do with the whole concept of the camel's nose under the tent.
Yeah.
That meaning that if we go out and inventory the Outer Continental Shelf off of areas where the coastal states have objected to OCS development, the concern is that the next step will be an attempt to try to open those areas to oil and gas development. But let me address the first issue first. The bill requires the Secretary of the Interior to conduct an inventory and analysis of oil and natural gas resources beneath all of the waters of the Outer Continental Shelf. The inventory must use any available technology except drilling, but including 3D seismic technology in order to obtain accurate resource estimates. The process of collecting 3D seismic information involves towing an air gun array behind a vessel, and the air gun array fires very loud sound. This is some of the loudest sound produced by humans.
Someone suggested it's comparable to an artillery shell, for example.
They're extremely, extremely loud. And the sounds bounce off the seabed formations and are read by a computer on the vessel. And that essentially allows the vessel to map the seabed and the geologic formations beneath it. Unfortunately, these very loud sounds are taking place in an environment where most of the living creatures rely on sound to live. So marine mammals, fish, all require a sound, an environment where they can communicate with each other. And these massive air gun explosions have been associated with significant effects on both whales as well as dolphins and fish populations. So the concern is that we're going to be inventorying the entire continental shelf. That could involve millions of these types of explosions and potentially create a noise environment that spans from Alaska to Florida that could have very significant effects, both individually as well as cumulatively, on our marine mammals that are so important to this country, and many of which are endangered, and our fish populations, which are critically important to the states. So those are some of the concerns with respect to the inventory. Once the inventory is conducted, then the Interior Department will analyze the results, and the second sort of suite of issues then emerges, which is, okay, then what do you do? Do you open these areas up? Do you keep them closed? How do we want to proceed as a nation? Our view is that we ought not to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars as a country to inventory areas that states don't want to see development take place in. It doesn't make sense to spend that kind of money if you're not going to actually open those areas up and develop them. And so, in our view, this is a misbegotten idea. It does not advance the nation's energy security, and it's simply a waste of taxpayer dollars.
There's no doubt that if then they will undoubtedly uncover areas that have recoverable resources, that once that becomes public knowledge, the debate will begin. It'll be like creating a whole series of new ANWR crises along our coastal areas. That's a tough side of this, is the fact that it's just going to create a lot of controversy in this country and possibly not even lead to that much real resource development. Let's get back a little bit to what's involved, because Here, to paint a picture, since this is a radio show, the entire coast, as you say, from Alaska down to California, and then from Maine all the way down to the tip of Florida, and then on the intercoastal areas, except for the Deep South and Louisiana and Mississippi and areas like that, will be subjected to this. The entire area will be mapped, and these boats tow these arrays of air guns, and they're exploding about every 6 to 10 seconds, so that virtually the entire coastal area will be impacted through time by this survey, every single square inch, if they're going to be effective.
If they do, in fact, survey the entire outer continental shelf, as the bill requires, then, in fact, there will be this incredibly intense and sort of universal sound environment that marine animals are going to have to deal with. And remember that marine mammals and fish need to use sound to communicate with each other, to find mates, to locate their young, to find food. So when you disrupt that environment, that sound environment in the ocean, you're potentially disrupting a whole set of activities that are essential for the survival of these animals. You raised a very good point earlier on, which is that when they inventory these areas, there may not in fact be a huge amount of oil and gas in the areas that are currently closed, and that's in fact what the Interior Department now estimates. If you look at their most recent estimates of oil and gas on the Outer Continental Shelf, they, which were just issued in December, 5 months ago, they think that most of the oil and gas, something around the proximity of 80% of the oil and gas that lies under the U.S. Outer Continental Shelf, is located in areas already available for leasing. So why are we spending this huge amount of money to inventory the moratorium areas when most of the oil and gas, by the government's own calculations, is already available to the industry? This is something that just strikes many of us as a very ill-begotten idea.
Any idea really what's behind that? Is it just someone's going to get a big contract? Or, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think part of it is that the industry is looking for, as appropriate, to make the most profit that it can. And many of it may be that the resources that may lie in the moratorium areas are more profitable to extract. But at a time when the oil and gas industry is enjoying record profits, it doesn't seem to us to be a valid reason to open up the Outer Continental Shelf to oil and gas exploration just to line the pockets of already rich oil and gas companies.
Do we know who would actually pay for this? In other words, this would be, in essence, if it were funded by the government, then this would be an effective subsidy. Not that subsidies are all that bad, but the oil and gas industry already receives tremendous subsidies. Who's paying for this?
Well, that's a very good question. And the Senator Nelson on the Senate floor yesterday in his statement when this issue was being debated noted that this inventory could cost upwards of $1 billion. Now, that is taxpayer money, presumably, if the government puts the bill, which it will. And the question then becomes, well, don't we have better uses for $1 billion than to essentially make it easier for the oil companies to make a larger profit? This just doesn't strike us as the best use of taxpayer dollars. And in addition, I think there's a lot of concern on the side of Democrats and Republicans about sort of what the long-term implications are of this type of activity. As you probably know, this is offshore oil and gas is an issue that crosses political lines and has been in protection for coastal areas from offshore development has been supported by people of all types of political stripes and up and down levels of government, from, you know, governors right on down to local chambers of commerce and others. And this sort of bipartisan nature of the opposition really sends a signal that, you know, the government's not going to be able to drill there. They're not going to be able to get any money back for the taxpayer that would offset the, you know, $1 billion that this might cost if in fact it goes forward. So there's a lot of revenue and taxpayer issues that I think haven't really been thoroughly examined by the Congress. Senator Martinez, who sponsored the amendment, is a Republican, and Senator Dole from North Carolina made a very eloquent statement against, you know, in support of this amendment that would have struck the inventory out of the energy bill. Republicans from all over the country have repeatedly and often objected to offshore oil and gas, including right up into the president's own brother, Governor Jeb Bush of Florida.
Because it has tremendous economic impact if there should be problems, if the coastal areas should be impacted by drilling rigs or spills.
That's exactly right. Most coastal states derive a significant portion of their economic viability from coastal tourism and fishing. And oil and gas development is fundamentally inconsistent with both of those.
One of the things I wish we had time to get into, but we won't today, and that is the fact that in terms of the effect on the ocean species, we really don't know. I mean, the fact that we know what may happen to whales or dolphins or porpoises or other large species of fish and mammals is important, but we have no idea scientifically really the impact that there could be long term on who knows how many different species, because we just don't know. In other words, these huge sonic booms can literally rupture hearing membranes and systems within animals, and we don't know the impact already on our challenged oceans that may have.
That's exactly right, and there's a growing awareness and concern in the scientific community about the noise level in the oceans, and cumulatively what that noise from everything from sonar to ship noise to oil and gas exploration, there's just many different sources of noise in the ocean, and animals have not been able to evolve fast enough to deal with them. And so, you know, there's some real, very serious questions about how we are affecting the animals that live in the ocean. And, you know, when people remember that, in fact, life in the ocean is essential for us, both on many levels, both for food as well as for other benefits, we are playing with fire when we don't really think about and evaluate the potential effects of such a massive undertaking as the one the Senate has just proposed that we do.
Lisa Spear is with the NRDC, and we're going to wrap this up in just a minute here. I'd like to know, This has been passed. I know it has been okayed. It received a positive response, this provision in the energy bill. What do you think is going to happen, and what is the NRDC suggesting that people do who are concerned?
You're correct that the inventory was passed and was accepted by the Senate. However, there is no similar provision in the House energy bill, and when the Senate and the House meet together to iron out the differences between the two bills, that will be the opportunity for us to try to remove the inventory from the final bill that emerges from Congress. And so people who are concerned about this inventory need to let their congressmen and senators know of their concern and their opposition to any provision in an energy bill that comes out of the Congress that would permit a massive inventory of oil and gas resources on the Outer Continental Shelf from taking place. Calls and letters are the single most effective ways of communicating to politicians that this is just not acceptable, and we urge people to make their views known as quickly and as urgently as possible.
And it's important that actually this be on both sides of Congress, both the House and the Senate, because there's two sides to the future of this progressing.
That's correct.
Lisa Spear, we're going to follow this, and if people want to learn more about the NRDC and track your efforts in this, what's the best way for them to do so?
The best way is to go to nrdc.org. Our website has lots of information about a whole variety of environmental issues, and we love to have people visit us. So thanks so much for having me on the show, Sydney.
It's been absolutely my pleasure, and I hope we have a chance to talk again about these issues. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Wild Side News.
Okay, and now back to the real world of people and places and our natural treasury. As we head out to Arizona for a visit with a park which celebrates the Triassic life of good old planet Earth, when we continue with your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.